Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Frost, and my guest today is Hannah Weston. She's the co-founder of Connection Training. I quite often think about different ways that I can get the most out of my time with my horse. So Hannah and I discuss how you work on the trust between you and your horse using a range of her connection training techniques. It's a positive reward system. She explains how target practice can help. If you've got one of those horses that pushes you around, then Hannah's got the best advice for you. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. When I'm thinking about having different guests to join us, to educate us within the equestrian industry, I thought it would be nice for us to try something on training. I hear a lot of different training techniques, and I don't actually know, one, who to believe, and whether it works, and we get told all these different options of things that we can use. So I thought, well, we're just going to go straight to somebody that knows what they're talking about. So my guest today is Hannah Weston. She owns a company called Connection Training. And even the name of the business in itself has me intrigued. So she's going to tell us all about her style of training. How are you, Hannah?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you're very welcome. Now, we've been talking a little bit about what you do. And I said, you've got to come onto the podcast and explain to us all about it. So let's start with the basics of what is connection training.
Okay, so connection training is a way of training horses using marker reward training. So I don't know if you heard of clicker training with any animals.
Yeah, just like dogs.
Yeah, like with dogs. So the way that it works is that you've got a specific marker signal which says to the animal, yes. And then you back that up with a reward. And we'll get into, there are lots of different rewards and things you can use. So connection training is based on that principle of looking for the horse to do the right thing, using a marker signal that says yes to pinpoint that, to give the horse kind of clarity and precision, and then using rewards to help motivate them to want to do it again and obviously to enjoy the training. The reason why we called it connection training is because we focus, although it's based around marker reward training, we focus mostly on the connection and the relationship between the horse and the human. So we take the principles and can, you know, really see that each horse is an individual, so you can apply it in lots of different ways to help suit each horse and human combination as well.
So is another word for this positive reinforcement training?
Yeah, so positive reinforcement is just about adding in reinforcement, reinforces rewards that the animal wants to work for. So yes, that's another term that's used as well.
Because I'll be honest with you, Hannah, a lot of people say to me, don't use treats, because if you use treats, then a horse will start to bite. So going through my lifetime of having Blackjack, which is 5 years, you know, I started off giving him treats. I started off with natural horsemanship, actually. And then I started using treats. And then I got told, well, you shouldn't use treats because the horse will bite. So then I took away the treats. And then it wasn't working. I couldn't make anything work. And I was going through a rut of really struggling with only groundwork, but getting him to listen. And then I thought, OK, well, I'll try treats again. And actually, he's picked it up quite quickly. So what do we do when we get told all this conflicting information?
OK, well, it's a great question. And it's definitely something to be really aware of before you get started. So firstly, I'd say that although we do use a wide variety of rewards, if you've got a horse, you know how strongly motivated they are by food. You just have to see how excited they get when you start to bring a bucket out to see that, you know, a little bit of something a bit more exciting is really highly motivating. And that's because food is a primary reinforcer. So because all living creatures need food to survive. The brain is really hardwired to look for and repeat behaviors that earn it food. So it's a really strong motivator. So we do use food a lot in the training, but you've got to begin with teaching the horse how to be calm and soft and polite around the food to begin with. So one of the reasons why horses start to get pushy or muggy or nippy around treats if they're kind of hand fed without the owner being aware of what they're doing is because the horse gets excited by the treats, can start to like smell them, and maybe initially like they'll just have a little nuzzle at a pocket or something, and then without even really thinking about it, the person's like, oh, I kind of want a polo, and gives him one. Mm. And that then behavior then gets reinforced. It would be the same, like you see it a lot. So if a horse is banging at the stable door when you approach with the feed bucket and you carry on and go in and put the feed bucket in, you're training the horse to bang at the door. Another one that I see which can then build into like aggressive behaviors around food are, say you go in with a bucket or a hay net and the horse pins their ears and the person's not really paying attention, but you put the food in anyway. The behavior and the emotions associated with the behavior are being reinforced. So the horse starts to not even think consciously, but subconsciously, the pinning the ears is the way that the food gets to them. And when you're using rewards, the horses start to, it's called increasing their own criteria, but basically they try harder of their own volition. You don't need to do more to try harder. So all of these behaviors start to escalate. So the little kind of nosing at the pocket leads to pushing or nipping, and the banging gets bigger and louder. Louder, and the ears back starts to kind of get stronger. So that's how it starts to go on kind of the wrong way, if you like.
Really interesting, because Blackjack walks backwards for treats.
Perfect. Like away from you.
Yeah, no, but he just walks backwards. Yes, away okay. from me. So he thinks that if he walks backwards, then and then he'll get a treat. And that's my fault, because, okay, 2 points here. The first one is I didn't want him to be pinning me against the stable in the early days. So I'd make him walk to the back of the stable. I'd put the food down. He'd wait. And then when I left the stable, he'd go and eat his food. Well, I just thought I was the natural horsewoman of the world. I thought, this is amazing. I've got a horse listening to me. But it totally makes sense what you're saying about, you know, it's their natural reward. So then when he moved to the fields, I didn't have a stable to do that. So I'd have to walk him backwards. So he was out of my space. He wasn't nuzzling me, pushing me. And then I'd give him his food. So now he walks backwards for treats. So if he knows I've got some in my pocket, he won't nuzzle me or kick or paw. He'll just start taking steps backwards.
Well, that's a perfect example though of exactly how the training works. So at the beginning, instead of the walking backwards, we basically reinforce them for, first of all, turning their head away from you, but then very quickly turn it into just stand next to me, just relax, calm, polite behavior. So that becomes a kind of default. So whereas you're saying Blackjack's default might be to walk backwards, the default that we begin to train, right, the very first behavior we train is, can you just stand next to me, nice and quietly, relaxed and calm and polite, and that becomes a very strong behavior for the rest of the training.
So that's what I need to work on. So what I didn't want to do was confuse him then with, well, now I'm asking you to walk forwards for treats, you know. So I guess what I've tried to do over the last few months is give him commands. So there's a command that means, is that right? It's a command,
yeah, exactly,
that means
right.
to move backwards, a command to walk forwards, a command to move sideways, and he only gets very few treats. I mean, yeah. You're talking maybe a carrot broken up into bits, but he has to do something for that reward.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, perfect. So okay. What we tend to teach is that the kind of standing calm and relaxed becomes an almost default behavior. So unless they're being asked to do anything specific, that's the thing that they're going to go to, their kind of go-to behavior. And then, yeah, the commands or cues for different behaviors. So you could say, okay, now we're going to get backwards, now we're going to walk forwards. And it's really important that the horse understands what those cues actually mean and that you're consistent in them. And then, yeah, rewarding good responses to your cues.
So he never gets a treat just for standing still, because that's the reward, is that in my head that's the, and I'm giving you examples of Blackjack, hoping that you can tell me where we're going wrong here, and you know, and offer some training advice for our listeners. But standing still is, that's just his reward, is that he's calm and he's happy, so he doesn't need a treat for doing nothing.
It depends on each individual horse. So for example, if you've got a horse who's very kind of forward going, very highly energetic, if you start giving all the extra rewards to the behaviours that they find intrinsically rewarding, which is being busy and doing stuff and going forwards, then they're just going to want to do more and more of those, and standing still and slowing down is going to become harder and harder for them to do. Whereas if you've got a horse who is kind of the other way, where they'd rather like snooze in the sun or have a cuddle, they're not very, very forwards going, they're not very motivated, obviously you want to then put all the extra rewards into the doing, into the going forwards, to help put more weight into that side, so that you can get, you want whoa and go in balance, basically. So you want to be able to chill out with your horse and then to be calm with you and then to be able to pick up the energy. And that's whether you're on the ground or whether you're riding. So I'd say with Blackjack, is he happy to stand quietly, or does he get kind of antsy and frustrated and want to start doing things? Does he like
laid back, he's horizontal. But the interesting thing is there's three different horses in the field and three totally different personalities. So I'll explain to you each of them. You have Blackjack, who's a Frisian, who's Mr. Laid Back and occasionally spooks at things, and he gets one carrot a day. That literally is his treat. The other two, so he's really laid back. Then you have a Thoroughbred, who is so highly strung and flits everywhere and is really sensitive. And I have to do all these horses. So I have to do their rugs, I have to feed them. So it's been really interesting learning their different personalities. I then have the third little pony that I think he's a New Forest pony, you know, that kind of breed. Normally, they're quite chilled. He's lovely, but he's very bolshy. So when it comes to putting their head collars on, Blackjack's fine. He'll go and have his head collar on. Frankie, who's the Thoroughbred, who's really highly strung. And then Alfie is the New Forest that's really bolshy. Frankie won't have a head collar put on, the Thoroughbred, and neither will Alfie, the New Forest pony. So I thought, well, I'll do, they're not my horses, but you know, I'll do with them what I did with Blackjack, which is teach them when they come up to me, it's okay to be near me and they get lots of love and whatever. Didn't work. The love bit did not work. As soon as I went anywhere near them, they just would literally gallop to the other end. So yesterday I thought, I'm going to use a carrot and just see how it goes. Frankie, the Thoroughbred, pushed me over, got so excited he was running on the spot, literally nuzzling every single pocket I had afterwards, was so close in my space that I felt unsafe. And then Alfie, I had to throw carrots near him so that he realised what I had, because he didn't even realise that I had treats. When he finally realised I had treats, he'd then come and have his head collar on, but he was the worst for being bolshy. So he was pushing me along as we were going.
Yeah. So this is really great, because you've got three different personalities, and this is why I was saying it. You've got to vary the training depending on the individual horse that you've got. Mm-hmm. So what there are a few things that I'd say. The first thing is that everything basically comes down to emotional associations that the horses have. So if you're looking at Frankie and Alfie, when they see a head collar, they're not thinking, oh, yay, this means good stuff. They're thinking the exact opposite. And problem behaviours that we have with horses come from those unwanted emotions being triggered. So whether it's like fear or anxiety or boredom, resistance, anticipation of pain, overexcitement, all of these are these kind of unwanted negative emotions. So it's first looking at like, well, it's quite interesting to see what's causing it and what those triggers are. So you're looking at, okay, when the horse sees the head collar, how do they feel? And then you did I love your approach of going, okay, well, let's try and make this more positive for them. So trying to change their emotions to one of joy and relaxation and enthusiasm. But then it's like, okay, it's gone too far the other way. So it sounds like Frankie and Alfie have both got experience of food without relaxation. And relaxation is a place that we come to so much. The three of us at Connection Training just talk about relaxation all the time, because it's really, really important. You want high levels of enthusiasm and relaxation, which is kind of a tricky balance to get. And when you've got it, everything becomes really quite simple, because the horse is motivated, yet they're chilled. So in the case of Frankie, the Thoroughbred, getting overexcited, that's the time when it's like, okay, how can we just cool this down, calm this down, be nice and relaxed. And you mentioned that you felt quite unsafe. So sometimes at the beginning we work, and this depends on the different horses, but you can work in protected contact. So you can work over a fence, so that you're not having to constantly like shoo him out of your space, which interrupts his ability to kind of learn. Because what's really important with the training is that they're taking a really active role in the learning. So they're not just kind of waiting to be like told what to do or to react to something, but they're really consciously present and figuring out what you want. So having a bit of distance helps because you're not having to constantly micromanage them. And obviously it's much safer for both of you. And in that, those times, just looking for any kind of softness, relaxation, breaths out, lowering the head, turning the head away, just anything that's kind of a little bit softer, and beginning with that, with reinforcing that. And then with Alfie, with the backing up, I'd go for something similar, but with the bolshiness, but I'd go for, you know, look for behaviors of, like you've done with Blackjack, can you back away from me to begin with? Mm-hmm. Can you take a step away? Can you turn away? Can you just stop? Can you slow down? And that's really important to get those bits in place before you kind of move on.
So let's go into deeper into Alfie, who's the pony.
Yeah.
He has a serious attitude. He's got small man syndrome. And actually, I'd say he's probably more unpredictable than the thoroughbred. So Frankie the thoroughbred will get so, he's so excited, he could flit and run at any point, any moment.
Yeah.
And I don't want him to spin and kick me. That's my worry with him. Ultimately, he's a really scared horse. He's afraid of a lot of things. He's very sensitive. So the slightest movement and he'll run. So I get where you're going with the keeping him calm, keeping him relaxed, keeping him happy to be around you without being demanding.
Yeah.
Alfie, I got him, tied him up, thought, let's have the calm time. You know, no treats when he's back. He's just got to stand there. I put a rug on him and he was disgusted that I put a rug on his back. Not upset, worried, angry. You know, he was not worried, upset or scared. It was pure, what on earth are you doing putting a rug on me? How dare you? I don't want this rug on my back. Proper attitude. Turn around to bite me. So sat him there, made him sit for a while, made him relax. He's got to have the rug on. He's not scared of it. There's nothing wrong with it. And we just chilled there for a little bit. And I thought, okay, he was calm. He'd got used to it, realised that actually he did have to have a rug on his back. So then I took his head collar off to go, loads of love. He looked at me, literally, it was like looking at a four-year-old child. He took, glanced right at me and then span and bolted off, kicking and bucking in the air. Is that attitude or are there other things going on there?
Well, it's really hard to say without seeing the whole situation. And obviously this is a one-off. So, you know, horses are complex creatures. Mm. But, you know, it's always about, okay, how can we get the horses to really want to do this and want to engage? No matter what negative emotions they're feeling, how can we change them? So the interesting thing, if you're looking at kind of like about anger and rage, is that is why that's triggered in horses. So one of the basis is, the kind of theories behind connection training is we use a lot of looking at the neuroscience of emotions. So we predominantly use the work of a guy called Jak Panksepp, who was a neuroscientist who studied, you know, the neuroscience of emotions, and he mapped out these like seven different emotional areas in the brains of all mammals. So these are specific areas in the brain that, if they're electrically stimulated, create a predictable emotional response. So that's the same in humans, horses, dogs, cats, all mammals. And the kind of how easily they're triggered depends on the species. So the kind of just as a quick guide to them, the kind of umbrella one is the seeking system. So that's about like finding the solutions to the problem. So how do you find food, find shelter, escape the predator, get warm, get cold, whatever is needed, that the seeking system kicks in to help you find the answers. And that's really what we're wanting to be triggered. And I said that they want the horses to be engaged in the process. And then you've got positive emotional systems like play and care, which is the kind of bonding system, and lust, which we try and stay away from when we're training horses. And then you've got the negative ones of fear, panic, which is about that comes in as separation anxiety with horses, and rage. Now, as like prey animals, the fear system is really, really easily activated in horses. So especially if you're talking about the thoroughbred, then, you know, if horses can escape, they will. They'll run, they'll get out of the situation if possible. But if they're confined in the situation and can't escape, that's usually when the rage system kicks in. So horses will, if there's a situation that they're not enjoying, given the choice, they'll leave. If they can't leave, that's when they'll start to get cross about it or start to get angry, because their brain's trying to find a way out of the situation, and running away is not a possibility.
Not an option.
Not an option, exactly. So if you're looking at like this rugging situation, if he'd been loose, I'm guessing Alfie would have left. But because he couldn't, then that's why he started to show that he was cross about it. And the other thing is that if horses have had like a long history of not being allowed to escape situations like that, then it can become they learn that rage is a more effective way to get what they need. So the way to looking at behavior is that they're always doing what works for them. And it's very easy to get into kind of labeling the horses one way or another, or trying to kind of work out why they're doing what they're doing. But they always do what works for them, that gets them what they need and what they want. So it's looking at what's actually reinforcing in this situation and how can I change it so that what I want becomes the most reinforcing thing for the horse to do.
The good news is it can be changed then. So if you do have one of these horses, because the owner, bless her, of Alfie was saying the other day, he just won't be caught. But when he's in, he enjoys the attention. He enjoys being groomed and he enjoys all of that. We know he doesn't like rugs because he's a rough and ready pony.
Yeah.
But you could go so deep with it because you could look at their history and, you know, he wasn't abused. You know, he's very well fed. He's, you know, he's ridden well. He doesn't have any back problems, all those standard things. When you're looking at behavior, you do have to take all the history into account. But taking that into account, using positive connection training, we can then retrain them to not do what we want, that's the wrong thing, but to be comfortable in our space.
Yes, absolutely. So if you look at horses, like if you're saying that he's happy once he's in but he doesn't want to be caught, that's a really common situation. So it usually begins because the horse doesn't like what happens when they're caught. Being caught leads to things they're trying to avoid, but over time that behavior can actually become quite habitual. So it's really common that when the horse sees someone approaching them in the field that they run away just from their past history. It's not necessarily to do with what's going on currently. So in those situations, it's about changing the associations they've got with a person. There's a blog on this actually where I worked with someone with a pony with a very long standing history of not being caught, and we just changed his associations, so when he started to see someone in the field, he came to them rather than run away. Obviously if it persists, then you have to look at, okay, well, what's coming next? But from what you said, then that's, I would guess that's, you know, that's definitely something that can be changed.
So, well, that's given three clear different horses and how connection training can help them or improve their behaviour. We do have to take into account that treating some horses might not be right for them. So when should we not be giving them treats?
There's usually some kind of food you can use with every horse. So if you're looking at dietary issues, and you know, I have trained horses with their normal diet, so hay and grass nuts and things like that. If you've got a horse who has a lot of kind of anxiety and stress around treats and food, and so I work with a lot of rescue horses, but even horses who've had any kind of food deprivation, had to fight for food, all that kind of stuff, then even just the presence of food can cause quite a lot of anxiety and stress and aggressive behaviors. And what I like to do is do the training separately from the food, but I think it's really important that horses in a domestic setting are taught to be calm and relaxed around food, because obviously they have people handling them and feeding them, even if they're just, there's hay being put out in the field or they're coming into a bucket in a stable, that situation doesn't cause them stress and anxiety. So we'll work kind of separately on, okay, can we bring food and it being calm and relaxed, but the training, we'll keep the food out until they've got a better association with it. But there are loads of other rewards that you can use. So it's about, again, looking at the individual horse. So like strokes and scratches can be really powerful for a lot of horses, especially if they're like losing their coat and things like that. And you know, like just kind of relaxed time together. You maybe your horse loves like popping over a jump, you can use that. You can definitely use favorite behaviors, and in fact often when you train behaviors that have been quite difficult, when you train that, overcome them and use a lot of reward, they start to really love them. So there was a pony I was working with yesterday at the rescue center who began very, very frightened of people, very frightened of being touched, and he needed, you know, obviously to be able to be handled. And the thing we've been working on recently is picking up his front feet, because his feet need trimming, but that was obviously really scary to begin with. But the staff at the rescue centre have done an amazing job, and now he loves picking up his front feet, and it's like his favourite behaviour. And we were actually using picking up his front feet as a reward as we began to train picking up his back feet. So we're like, hey, that's great,
Wow.
you gave your back feet. Okay, now you can give your front foot because that's what you really want to do. So, you can see then in each individual horse that they've got different preferences. So like just another example of ridden, two of my horses, I've got one that loves dressage and one that loves jumping, and I like to do a bit of everything with all of them. So the one that loves jumping, when she gives me some nice lateral movement or some great transition, I'll say, okay, great, now let's pop over a jump. But the other one, I'm like, okay, well, you popped over the jump enthusiastically, now let's do a shoulder in, because it just depends on their own personal preferences. But they do show their likes and the things that they really love doing quite clearly.
Oh yeah, you can see in their body language and their ears, Blackjack loves a good canter across the forest. Which brings me to a brilliant story I heard last week. A friend of mine is a groom. She rides for other people. And she took this pony out and it bolted for half an hour across the whole of the forest, up and down hills, in a huge circle, and ended up taking her back home again. Now, she's a professional groom, so she's thinking, what on earth is going on? So she was trying to work out whether it had back problems or what could be wrong with it. Had a chat with the owner, and she said, oh no, he just does that. So the next day, she took this horse out again and it bolted again, but this time it stopped at certain locations, stopped dead. She had no idea why. So she phoned the owner again and said, today he's just stopped 3 times, like full out, flat out gallop. She literally had to hang on and then stop dead. And she said, oh yeah, because we were having problems with him bolting every time, I started stopping him in certain places and having rest breaks where I'd give him a polo. So now he knows that's where to stop. And she said, why didn't you tell me this so I can at least, be aware, be warned that he's either going to bolt or he's going to stop dead. And the whole reason behind that was because she used to love galloping him across the forest, and they would just go and go and go and go. So she introduced these rest breaks, and bit by bit she's trying to reward him riding, and his reward is the treat, it's the polo, because ultimately the galloping for him, he's enjoying so much, that is his reward. And she's got to a stage, not the groom, the owner has got to a stage where she can't stop him from galloping.
Yeah, exactly. So you're looking at intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. This is what I'm saying. If the horse already loves it, you don't want to then be adding too many extra rewards on top, because that's going to be all they want to do. So if you took a horse like that and started adding the polos in for him galloping, then it would just get the problem would get even worse. So the concept of starting to add the polos in and maybe do it a little bit differently, but
No, I'm
it's a really
interested to
good
know
beginning.
how would you do it?
Okay, so if we're working with a horse like that where the behaviors become quite ingrained, is the thing that I'm always looking for is the connection. So it's the responsiveness to the rider's cues. That's what everybody wants at the end of the day, to be able to go for a gallop when you say, but also to be able to come back down to a walk when you say as well. And what we need to look at here is that, setting the horse up for success, so taking him to a place where he's not expecting just to gallop flat out to begin with, because then you're kind of, fighting a losing battle, if you like, where if you're always gallop on that track and you take him there, he's going to expect to be wanting to go. So we're setting them up for success by thinking about where we're going to train, when we're going to train, that kind of thing. And then I would begin with adding a lot of reinforcement in for listening to the rider on, okay, downward transitions, can you stop, can you wait, can you little bits of flexions, can you do circles rather than going in a straight line, and start to change what the horse expects to be doing when they go out. So it almost like becomes little schooling rides, basically. And just as you would in the arena, you're looking for, okay, can you respond to my aids promptly and softly and eagerly, and can we still do that when we're out and about? And then when they've done that nicely, you might say, okay, now we'll go for a gallop. And then can we come back down, do a little bit of some of this the more like schooling exercises, where a lot of the reinforcement is for all the basically just listening to the rider, but the emphasis is really on slowing down and stopping and staying soft in that moment. But it depends on, a lot of the story that you said, he's clearly just learned that you go. Then my old pony Toby, who was the guy who kind of started all this, when by the time he was retired hacking out, he just knew when to trot, when to canter, because we'd done the same route so often, and that was fine. But a lot of obviously bolting comes from fear, and then it's a slightly different approach that you'll need.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's interesting. Yeah, so what, okay, so what do you do when you have a bolter that does it out of fear?
So if you're looking at fear, then there are some more concepts to take into to be aware of, which I'd be starting to look at impulse control and threshold. So threshold is, if you're looking at emotions, threshold is the kind of how much of that emotion they're feeling before they, while they can still learn. Mm-hmm. So horses can feel like a little bit of anxiety and still be able to be thinking, be present, be working things out, be able to stay connected to you. But once they go over threshold, they actually can't. Their brain's just in, you know, kind of red alert, like just get out of here. And that's often what happens when you have a full-on bolt. The horse is not thinking, they're way over threshold, they're just going, you can't get through to them. You know that feeling, it's horrible. And the horse is just in a really, really high state of fear. Impulse control is about teaching the horses to control their impulses. So we've actually discussed this already a little bit. So if you look at horses who want to kind of push for treats and you're teaching them to turn their head away in order to get the treats, then you're teaching them to control their impulse of just searching out the food and offer a different behavior instead. And impulse control is really important for horses. It's what mature horses have that baby horses don't, that you can feel that difference when you take a mature horse into a situation. They can think through it, whereas baby horses, they don't have that, so they just get really excited or they get really anxious. So if you're looking at a fear situation to begin with impulse control, then it's about setting up the situation to trigger very low levels of fear and teaching the horse that an alternative behavior, being able to think through things, is going to be more rewarding, that they can stay connected to you. So for example, what I might do is set something up in the arena, like maybe put like a tarp in there, for example. It's a great one. You're going to approach the tarp, the horse maybe starts looking at it, getting anxious, and instead of them wanting just to turn around and run, which is going to be their impulse, you get them to the point where they're still able to think, and you say, okay, can you look to me, can you take a deep breath, can you touch this target, can you take a step back, and you make sure that's really, really, you obviously reinforce that a lot, and then you take the horse away from the tarp. So the next time you approach it, the horse has already had an experience of, okay, I felt this little bit of anxiety, but I tuned into you and I listened and that worked out really, really well. So they're going to be able to probably approach it with more confidence and be able to stay more and more tuned in. And the more different situations and experiences that the horse has where they feel that small level of anxiety and are able to tune into you and it works really well, the stronger and stronger that becomes. So if you, with a bolter of fear, a horse who bolts from fear, I would begin with a lot of different exercises like that, first of all on the ground and then ridden, gradually increasing the difficulty of the situation that they can stay calm. I will also do a lot of, can we go up, get fast, like for example, increase the energy levels. So often when horses trot and canter, canter especially is quite an emotional gait for a lot of horses, because they only canter naturally when they're really excited or they're really frightened. So often when they canter, it can trigger those emotions. So we go in the arena, can we come up to trot and canter and then come back down to walk and calm down again? And once they've got this practiced in a lot of situations, feeling that little bit of fear or feeling the excitement and coming back down and being calm, that becomes really strong, and they then start to switch where they tune into you and say, okay, well, what should we do now in this situation? And then you say, okay, now can we go out and do the same things out and about and build it up slowly from there?
That's incredible, because amazing. It's almost a little bit like that desensitization.
Yes, it's exactly like desensitization. And but it includes a little bit extra where we're looking for the horse to consciously offer an alternative behavior. So whereas with general desensitization and habituation, you just have them like next to the, you have, you know, expose them to the situation regularly enough that it just becomes routine.
Yes.
What we're actually looking for here is, okay, you're feeling this, what are you going to do about it? And that, where they start to really think. And that's really special, actually, when the horse, like, you can see them really consciously be aware of what they're doing and turn to you and say, well, how about I do this, or can we come here, or what do you think? And having that conscious part of it is really nice.
I felt that once, and it was once in 5 years, and it was incredible. And it was Blackjack didn't want to go down a really steep hill. It was so steep. Oh, it wasn't that steep, but it was steep for him. You know, in his head it was, you know, a mountain. So he was really struggling with it, and I watched his ears go back. And I just said, come on, you can do it. Walk on, walk on. And I felt his whole, because he was anxious, I felt his whole body just let out a big sigh. And he did it. And he was so proud at the bottom. He was like up, and you could just tell he was so proud of himself. And he was up on his toes, and he was like, oh. And then we just carried on walking. And I remember thinking, wow, that's the first time that I actually know that you've listened to me. And I'm so proud of you for that. The tricky thing for when it comes to riding is we do all these exercises in the school. And in the school, it works really well. When I say we, you know, I mean... you know, riders. So riders can do all those exercises in the school and it works really well. They go out on a hack and you might see a pig, or you might see a cow, or, you know, there might be a cyclist, and suddenly that's really scary. Those situations are so different every time you go on a hack. You can't repeat that behaviour to get them calm. So how do you then make the transition of in the school to what's going really well to then out on a hack?
That's a really great question, because you can't desensitize them to everything that you're going to meet, but you can teach them how to control their impulses and to tune into you and offer them alternative behaviors that will help them to calm down and stay connected and deal with the situation. And that does transfer from to novel situations that they've never come across. So that's, like I said, introducing them initially to something a little bit scary, and then saying, well, can you still listen to me whatever it is, going past the balloons that you've tied to the side of the arena fence or whatever it is you're working on, can you still stay connected to me in that situation? And as you do it, you've gone past the balloons, you've gone past the tarp, you've gone through the flags, whatever it is, and then when you go out, you go, okay, well, there's a car, but it's the same exercise, but instead of it being balloons or a tarp or a flag, it's just a car going past. You say, okay, can you flex, can you listen to me? That's great. Okay, there's a cyclist, can you flex, can you listen to me, can you take a step back, can you take a breath? Brilliant, that's really nice. And the more situations you do that in, the more it becomes kind of habitual, but also that they learn that if they do that, things tend to work out pretty well. So it becomes a much stronger behavior for them. It builds a stronger reinforcement history, is what we say, that those tuning into you, and this is where it becomes about the connection, that the horse looks to you and says, well, what do we do about this? And they trust, because of the past experiences of listening to you has worked out pretty well, that what you say is likely to be a good thing to do.
This is brilliant. The hardest thing that we find, not being experts, is that we pick up bad habits along the way, though, when we're trying to do this training. So another clear example is Blackjack doesn't like cars very much. Now, I have done everything. We've had cars in the arena. We've had dogs barking in the back of the car. We've had kids shouting out the window and waving. You know, we've had the little England flags on the cars. In the arena and at the field, he doesn't care. He's not bothered. There can be a parked car with nobody in it that's been there for a week, and every day he will go past it sideways, snorting, staring at the car. He does the most beautiful sidesteps. It's the only time we can ever get it. So now I'm trying to teach him to go past the car straight rather than But we've picked up that bad habit. I'm so proud of him because he'll get past it and he's being brave and bold and he'll be the first horse forward. But we've picked up the bad habit of every time he's not sure of something, he goes past it sideways, which can ultimately be dangerous. So when you're talking about your next level of your connection training, how do you then, what is the next level? How can you fix those bad habits that we've picked up in the beginning?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a bad habit as such. I think that horses are very designed to pick up unusual things. And often it's that the thing that spooks them most is you going around a local route that you've done a lot and there's something new there where they're like, that's different, that's changed. And they're kind of, you know, designed to kind of pick that up. So to say, it's really, honestly, it's just the same exercise, but building it, doing it more, doing it in a wider variety of locations with a wider variety of different objects and things. So for example, one of the exercises that I do with my horses is I teach them all to target. So targeting is teaching your horse to, well, predominantly touch an object with their nose when you ask. So when I say touch, it means, okay, they've got to touch it with their nose. And that's a really useful behavior for exploring the world, because often the horses are anxious about these things because they don't know what they are or why they're there or what to do about them. And when you say, well, can you touch, it becomes a target and they're like, oh, I get it, it's just a different shape target. So I use that a lot, like, you know, for example, roadwork signs that have been put up on the side of the road where they start to kind of look at those and you say, well, it's just a target, can you touch? And you can see the difference where they're like, oh, it's a target, okay, I know what to do with that, because suddenly it gives meaning to the object. So and that's one thing that you can start to play with.
So how do you do target? How do you do that?
Okay, so to begin that, and it's one of the first behaviours that we teach because it's such a valuable behaviour, is you take an object, usually that your horse doesn't know. It can be pretty much anything. So even like a empty Coke bottle taped onto the end of a stick is totally fine, would be a fine target. We've got kind of specific targets that have like a white ball on the end of a stick, but you can use anything. And you go, so once your horse has learned, okay, they turn the head away, then you say yes, or you click and they get the reward, they understand about the marker. So the really important thing about the marker is that yes, it says yes to the right behavior, but it's also known as a bridge. So it bridges the time lapse between the horse doing the right behavior and being able to get the reward. And that's really important, because you can't reward a horse immediately when they pick up the correct canterlead or go over a jump or, you know, whatever it is, go past the car. You might not be wanting to stop and feed at that moment, but you can say yes. So it's important that the horse understands how the marker works and that it is it does bridge that time lapse between them doing the right thing and getting the reward. So once they've learned that, just standing next to you, you hold out your object, whatever your target's going to be, and most horses will sniff it anyway because they're going to explore it. And when they do, you can click or say yes and then give them a reward for it. And you hold it out again and they look at it again and they go, oh, you say yes, and you give them a food reward for it. And what generally happens is they do that a few times while they're interested in the object. And then you hold it out and they're not interested in the object anymore because they've explored it. So they start to just kind of like look around instead, or maybe look for the treats or what they can do. And that's the piece where the real learning happens, because at that point you just wait until they come back. And often what happens is they're like, oh, well, I'll go back over here because this has worked for me in the past. So they'll go and touch it again with their nose. And you can say, yes, that's really great. And that's the piece where the horse really starts to put together that it's their action that causes you to click and reinforce. And that's really important that they understand, oh, if I do this, then it's going to lead to whatever reward you've got. And very quickly, within a few minutes, for the vast majority of horses, when you hold it out, they'll touch it with their nose kind of wherever you present it. So that's how we begin that. And then to transfer it to different objects, you start to hold out different objects and say touch. You make sure your cue's the same. So my cue's the word touch. Shauna uses the word target. And I always, she's American, and I always take the mick out of her for saying target.
So do you use the same cues for the same horses though?
The cues must be the same for the horses, yes, because it's really important that they understand what you're asking them to do in order to be able to do it. And the being aware of your cues is really important. And often, like, people when they're working with their horses aren't necessarily that aware of what exactly what they're doing
to ask for the behaviours, and cues can get really muddled, and that confusion can cause frustration in horses. It can cause them to like quit and stop trying. It can cause them to offer the wrong behaviors, and sometimes it's just about backing up and, you know, even watching a video of yourself and going, okay, well, what are my cues? What does the horse really truly understand them? So a lot of times people think that the horse knows what they're asking, but actually they don't. It's kind of been like a little bit of coincidence. So a really common one is young horses who have been taught to lead, and often people think that they know how to lead, but when you really break it down or it's in a difficult situation, you find out the horse isn't that clear about what actually the pressure on their nose really means, and you just have to break it down, and once you've taught them, that's, you know, it becomes much clearer, and they're happy to respond. So I think the cue clarity and making sure that the horse isn't confused and that both you and your horse know what you're asking for and how you're asking for it is really, really important to to the success of training your horse.
And consistency too. So it's got to be consistent behaviour. There's no point in teaching them to do it on the Monday and then not bothering again for 3 weeks, because you're going to be starting again all the time, aren't you?
Well, yes. I mean, they do remember this. Shauna's got a great video online of when she went back to see her horse and she hadn't seen him for 7 years, and he remembered everything that they did together and was overjoyed. So yeah, they do remember it for a long time, but the consistency is important for making consistent progress. You have to put the time in, absolutely, and consistency is really important, that you do things in a specific way so that the horse really gets, you know, can understand what's going on and is able to respond
it.
Really well.
They've got to enjoy it as well, you know, and they've
got
to
be
relaxed, as you told us at the beginning, otherwise there's no point. And how long then? So based on them enjoying it and they've got to be relaxed and stay calm throughout the training, how long should we be training them for? Because I'm sure it's less than 30 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so at the beginning especially, short and sweet is generally better. And especially at the beginning when they start to really, and I think because you've done some of this stuff with Blackjack already, it depends on the stage of the horse, but if they're already kind of aware and thinking, then they're usually able to go for a little bit longer. But for a lot of horses who haven't had that kind of interaction before, you can see at the beginning as the cogs start really whirring and they're starting to really think about it, 5 minutes they start to kind of be needing a break. So what I'll do is work with them for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, but there'll be lots of little mini sessions in between. So we'll do a few minutes and then we'll have a break together, and then we'll do another few minutes and we'll have another break together. And at the beginning, those breaks are completely time off, because the horse just needs some time just to kind of get a little bit of brain power back and process what they've just learned. Mm. But then as the horse gets more experience, those breaks can be more, you know, maybe it's like walking around on a long rein or doing easier behaviours that they know. So for example, with my horses who are advanced horses, then we'll still only spend 5 or 10 minutes focused on teaching something new, but then we'll go and do something easy that they know, that they're, because that doesn't take the same kind of brain work. So it kind of depends on how much your horse knows. If everything you're doing with them at the beginning is that they're learning, then they do need kind of time off. So I tend to work in very short bursts. And if you've only got 5 or 10 minutes, you can teach them a lot. Mm. 5 or 10 minutes a day, you can absolutely teach them a lot.
And at what point then do you take the treats away?
And that's another really good question. So we tend to keep the clicks and the rewards, the food rewards especially, for when we're teaching behaviours. So there's a process of when you teach the behaviour, that make sure the horse understands it, that they've got a strong reinforcement history with it, which means that they enjoy it, that they know it, that they look forward to doing it. And then you start to fade out the clicks and the food together. So I tend to then, once they know it, the click is really precise, and that's really why it works so well. So say you're training half pass or something, the horse is going to get it and lose it and get it and lose it. And you can use the click when they get the right step and say, yes, that's it. Yes, that's it. And that precision is fantastic for teaching. But once they know it, you kind of more want to say, hey, you know, that was just a great job. And that's what I use the praise for. So once they've learned a behavior, I can just kind of say, yeah, that's awesome, well done. And I tend to switch on to praise. And that's both specific words, I use the word good a lot, but also the tone of voice. And a lot of people know that their horses already respond to praise really well. And then start to put in reinforces now and again. So at the beginning of learning a behavior, it's a very high rate of reinforcement, because you want the horse to really love it, to know it, and to be motivated to try. But once they've got it, you want to put them onto you kind of vary all the reinforcers. So you'll expect them to do more, but you'll I'd still reinforce it now and again, both with the odd polo or piece of carrot, but also with different rewards, like I said before, like popping over a jump or having an amble round on a long rein or all those different things that the horse enjoys. So it's quite a process, but there's nearly always, I love training, so there's always something that we're working on for those kind of more intense bursts in between.
It's brilliant, and it's so much fun. You talk about the relationship earlier about, you know, the relationship between a person, an owner and their horse, or a rider and their horse, and when you see them really listening, there's just no feeling like it. I love
it's wonderful. My horses, I put a video on Instagram actually the other week where when I come out with my tack, my horses whinny, and they all line up at the gate because they all want their go, and you know, when I stand on a mountain block, they all come and line up, and it's just such a wonderful feeling to know that your horse really loves it too, and it's that partnership.
So I do have one very nervous question that I want to ask you. Someone once said to me that your horse thinks that you're a big apple because they come running to you because you feed them treats, which is true. But I want my horse to come to me because he wants to spend time with me, not just because I'm feeding him treats. So how can I build that relationship? I mean, I know Blackjack loves me, so that's fine. He knows where he's, you know, his bread's buttered and that he's safe and cared for and loved. And actually, he'll come up to me anyway without, you know, we've now taken those carrots away when it goes to going and collecting him and things. But I don't want food to be the ultimate goal. I want the time with me to be the goal.
Yeah, really great question. So it comes down to always emotional association. So when your horse sees you, how does he feel? Is he excited? Is he enthusiastic? Is he anxious? Does he try and avoid you? Like, and if you add food into the equation, then that's quite a good way to bump up your like
brownie points.
Brownie points with a horse. But it's not the be all and end all in any way, shape or form. It's so much more about the communication between you, the kind of, you know, exercises and games and enrichment that you bring to your horse. So if your horse loves going out and you're the person that helps to enable him to go out and explore the world, then that's going to help boost your relationship. If he knows he can turn to you when he's anxious and you're going to help him feel more relaxed, that's going to boost your relationship. And so the training, this is why it's connection training. You can get a certain way just by adding food in, but there's actually a lot more to it than that. It's got to be a much more complex about reading the horse and seeing what they actually enjoy and what they need from you in order to build that relationship. And also, it's really important to spend a lot of time with your horse where you're not training as well. So it's not about the training. And we really advocate that you do like little bits of training, but then spend a lot of time just with your horse, just kind of being together, like maybe grazing together or walking together, and you know, doing the training without the food, and so that you've really got to look at the other reinforcers that you've got available. So it's definitely not all about the food. There was a really interesting, somebody brought this up actually at the rescue centre again yesterday, where there's a little pony who was really anxious to be around people at all, and one of the members of staff had done a great job of building his confidence. So when she went into the field, he would now run over and stick his head in the head collar, and she could touch him all over, and that was really great. And one of the other staff members had said, yeah, but because the favourite staff member had been away ill, and one of the other staff members was like, well, we can't catch him. And she's like, but I've been feeding him every day, like surely he should be associating me with, you know, these good things. Why doesn't he trust me? And I was like, well, just because you've been feeding will have built your brownie points up to a certain level, but you haven't actually been doing the two-way communication, the conversations with him. He hasn't worked through his, you know, I've been asking you questions and seeing kind of how you respond to them. And it's that it's really that communication that really strongly builds the trust. So obviously we discussed the next steps of building his trust with people in general rather than this one person, but it really highlighted that, you know, you can be feeding a horse and that's not enough to have the whole level of trust and communication. So it is definitely about a lot more than the food, and we recommend that you spend a lot of time with your horse, not feeding as well as using
just letting them be a horse. I mean, I'm not being funny, but if my husband, you know, treated me like that every day, said, well, I'll give you dinner if you do this every day or you do that every day, eventually you're going to say, oh, do you know what? I really don't care. You know, I need, there's other things that the horse needs. If you're continuously asking things of them constantly, day in, day out, and not just giving them a chance to be with you, just relaxing and just literally spending time with you, then that's what they do in their herds, isn't it? They spend time with each other, not actually asking anything of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. And you can, if you focus literally just on the behaviours without the emotional piece and without the relationship piece, then you can train a lot, but there's often a lot of tension that goes with it. So, for example, you can see some horses that have been trained using clicker training without that relationship and emotional piece, where they're doing stuff, but there's a huge amount of tension with it. So maybe they're just like rushing through everything. They're really frantic. They can't just chill out. And that's when it becomes all about the food. And, you know, if you make it all about the food, it'll be all about the food. But the food's a fantastic tool as part of a bigger whole.
Great. It's brilliant, Hannah. It's so good. And I can't wait to get down to the field now and do some other things. I think I'm quite lucky. You know, Blackjack's a cool horse. But I'm really keen to do more with the other two, with Alfie and Frankie. And obviously with their owner's permission. I mean, they're happy. They just want him to be able to be caught. So they're kind of my projects.
That's awesome. It's so much fun. Honestly, I've never had, and before I started training this way, I never had so much fun with horses.
Oh, it's fab. You've recently come back from Spain, because a little birdie tells me you're opening up a centre there.
Yeah, so one of our colleagues she's our first connection training instructor, Claire, she lives out in Spain, and Rachel, who's also part of connection training, her and Claire have set up a centre out there. So they've got 9 rescued horses. That is a training centre, so you can go out on horsey holidays and stay there, and there's a swimming pool and lots of horses to play with, so it's really nice. We've all just been out there actually, because we've got just on our first instructor group training out there. So all of us were over there, which was really, really nice.
Oh, it sounds fab. Horses, training, holidays, swimming pool, sun. Really ideal, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, Hannah, you're the founder of Connection Training. So how can we follow you? Because you're the one that we want all the tips from. So are you on Twitter?
There's the three of us that founded Connection Training. So there's myself, there's Rachel Benningfield, and there's Shauna Karash. And we are on Facebook, Connection Training. And we're also on Instagram as Connection Training. And our website is connectiontraining.com.
Amazing. Well, we will be following you. So send us lots of photos, please, and videos of what you're up to with your rescue ponies. And
yeah, we do. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been really great to chat.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can listen to previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk, and you can listen on iTunes and Acast. If you haven't hit subscribe yet, then just hit the subscribe button, because then you'll never miss a Horse Hour episode again. They download directly through to your mobile phone, making it super easy. I love seeing what you get up to with your horses, so keep tagging us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're at Horse Hour. And don't forget the hashtag Horse Hour, so you can see what everybody else is getting up to. Hope you have a great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter Mondays 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.